The Mauritius Moshe has a simon here, which I just found today. Lamed Aleph, Bedin Chaticha Nasis Nevela. And he has a question here about a tarovis of Yovesh B'Yovesh. Well, let's say, for example, you have one piece of Nevela that gets mixed up with another piece of Heter. And I don't know which is Iser, which is Heter. I have no Rove, so I cannot apply Bittel. And now these pieces of meat, or one of them, gets mixed up in a second Tarovis. So he writes the following. Harishonim Nechleku, Be'ezo Tarovis Nemar Din Chatichanasis Nevela. And first he starts with the Shita of Tosus and a number of other Rishonim, that in a Tarovis of Yavesh, he says, there is Chaticha Nasis Nevela, but only if the Yavesh was Bolea from Lach. Aval b'tarovesh al Yavesh b'Yavesh, there was no Blea, lo nemar din Chaticha Nasis Nevela.
This is one view.
That's Tosus' Shita, plus he has a whole list of Rishonim. Then he has a second Shita, which he identifies as the Ramban in the name of the Raivin and a number of other Rishonim. B'tarovesh shel dover yavesh shebola isur nemar din chaticha nas levelu dvarim hamisarvin bein b'yavesh bein belach lo nemar din chaticha nas levelu. So this Shita is establishing, again in the name of the Raivid, that there's no Chaticha Nasis Nevela in the case of Lach. So let's imagine that you had a mixture of, say, Yayin Nesach with Yayin Shel Heter, and there was no Bittel. Now it gets, some of the wine gets mixed up in another Tarovus. Do I need Shishim against that amount of Yayin Nesach, or the whole kit and caboodle is Nevela? And here the Raivid says we don't apply the principle of Chanan in a case of Lach. So we now have two limitations of Chanan. According to one Shita, that's the Tosus Shita, there's not going to be Chanan in a Tarovus of Yovesh B'Yovesh. And if we add the Raivid Shita, there's no Chanan in the case of a Tarovus of Lach Balach. And then we have a third Shita, which is the Ramban Shita, that Bein B'Tarovus Shel Lach Balach, who Bein B'Tarovus Shel Yovesh B'Yovesh, Nemar Din Chaticha Nasis Nevela. So what's undeniable, and nobody questions this, is that if you have a Tarovus of Yovesh B'Lach, meaning that if the Yovesh was Bolea, a liquid tam of Isra, that's the case of Cholov and Basar, then for sure we would apply the principle of Chaticha Nasis Nevela. Again, you always have to ask yourself a different question: does it apply to all Isurim or only to Basar B'Cholov? So that's in a case where there was a Blia into the Yavesh. But if there was no Blia, for example, Yavesh B'Yavesh, then there's no Chaticha Nasis Nevela. If it's Lach B'Lach, the Raivid says, then there's no Chaticha Nasis Nevela. We don't know why. And that's what we're going to try to read what he has to say here. In the next major paragraph, he has something called an Iser Mashahu. And he says, Od Nechleku Rishonim Ha'im Nemar Din Chaticha Nasis Nevela B'Iser Mashahu. And that's an afkemina, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of min b'mino. There are other cases where there's an Isur Mashu. For example, Yayin Nesach is also b'mashu, Chometz b'Pesach is also b'mashu. So in these cases, there's no Nesinas Tam, per se. There are other reasons why it's Osur, but not because of Nesinas Tam. So there are many Rishonim, and the one who's at the head of the pack seems to be Rabbeinu Tam, who assume that din chaticha nas nevela lo nemar beisur mashu, because the language of Rav here on Daf Kuf Ches is kevin shenasan tam bechaticha chaticha atzma nasas nevela. So that even though according to Rabbi Yehuda min bimino is not bottom, but there's no din of chaticha nasas nevela because the language of the Gemara is kevin shenasan tam. And in Minbim, you know, it's not an Iser of Messina's Tam. It's a different kind of an Iser. Ulam, however, Yesh Rishonim, and again he quotes the Ramban and others, Shekosu Degam Bishir Mashu Ikadin Chaticha Nasis Nevela. Now Yesh Lodun, he writes, Begeder din chaticha nas nevela ha'im gidruhu heter shema'urav bo isur. So you have something that's mutter, but there's a tarovus of isur. Nasil chaticha snevela odilma gidro heter sheish lo tam shel isur. So is it tarovus of isur into the heter that generates chanan, or is it the tam of the isur that permeates throughout the chaticha of heter that makes chanan? And the nafkamina is going to be the case of mashu, or for example what we discussed before about yavish b'yavish. In these cases there's no nesinas tam of isur into the heter, there's only a taroves, and we're not sure if the principle of chanan is predicated on nesinas tam or just simply tarovus. Once there's a tarovus, and the tarovus is asura, then we apply chanan. So we have those two nafkaminas of yavish b'yavish, where there's no nesinas tam, or for example in isur mashu, according to Yehuda min bimino, other cases of an isur mashu like yayin nesech, or like chametz v'pesach, and there's no nesinas tam. So the question would be whether you apply chanan. But in the case of lach b'lach, that's a little bit more problematic, because there, lechor, you have both a taroves and a nesinas tam. So what would be the explanation of the Ravid Shita that we don't apply chaticha nas nevela in the case of a taroves of lach? He says the following. Now let's go back for a moment to Rabbeinu Tam. And we saw that according to Rabbeinu Tam, chanan doesn't apply to an Iser Mashu. And we also had a machlokus Rishonim whether chanan applies to a tarovus of Yavish B'Yavish. So let me just read to you a few lines here in the Moreshes Moshe and see if we can make any sense out of it. He says, Geder Iser Chanan, according to these Rishonim, is Chaticha Sheyeshlo Tam Shel Isur. And that's why we said in the name of Rabbeinu Tam that in the case of a Mashu, we don't say Chanan, because there's no Tam of Isur. That would apply also to those Rishonim who say that there's no, the Baal Yatos who say that there's no Chanan in Yavish B'Yavish. He says the following, that in the case of a chaticha sheyesh batam shel isur, that's where we do apply chaticha nas nevela, ein la heter mitzius bifnei atzmo, valkein nases lechatichas nevela. I'm just going to translate the words. He says that the heter loses its identity once the tam of isur enters into the heter, because now the heter is carrying within it a tam of isur. The Torah holds, you know, the principle of tam ki ikar. So at this point, that piece of heter has no status as an entity unto itself. Again, his language is ein la heter mitzius bifnei atzma, valkein nasis nevela. However, in the tarovus of yovesh b'yovesh, the heter has its mitzius, and the iser has its. Again, we don't know which is which. We can't determine. But nevertheless, you can't say that the heter lost its metzius as a separate entity. There was no tam that entered into the heter. The same is true for a mashu. And he quotes Rishonim that say that ein chanan lefisha ze omed b'fnei atzma v'ze omed b'fnei atzma. So once you can separate between the Iser and the Heter, then you don't apply the principle of Hanan, because the Heter is Omid Bifnei Atzmo. The essence of Hanan is when the Heter loses its status, its reality, its entity as a Metzius of Heter, because the Tam penetrates into the Heter. I'm still confused, honestly, about Lach Balach, the Ravid sheet. So fast forwarding to the end of this essay, he quotes the Arza Rua, and the Arza Rua holds Ein Din Chatichanas Nevel B'Tarovet Shalach, meaning the Arza Rua belongs to the school of the Ravid. So for example, if we go back to the paragraph of the Ravid, which is at the beginning of this essay, he has a list of Rishonim who agree with the Ravid, and apparently the Or Zeruah belongs to that list. I see the Mordechai, and I see a quote from the Arzarua, "Delo amrin chanan elahecha sha iser hu atzmo b'toch keder shel heter, aval hecha sha eino sham ela al yedei tarovos velo sha iser nichnas b'toch haheter." Delo amrin chanan. So again, the yesod here, according to the Arzarua, is that chanan is based on the fact that the iser is nichnas l'toch haheter. Right, so once the Iser is nichnas b'toch haheter, then the heter has no metzius unto itself. So the heter turns into Isur. And again, that would explain why there's no chanan in Yovesh b'Yovesh, nor is there any chanan in the case of an Isur mashu. But I'm still perplexed about lach b'lach. So he writes the following.
We're still talking about tam.
Again, what he says about Hanan is that the Tama Iser is Nichlas Etocha Heter. And once that happens, the Heter loses its identity. His language is Ein Lo Metzius Bifnei Atzmo. V'yesh Lomer Da'ar Zarua L'shitase D'nisbayer B'divrei Ar Zarua D'ein Din Hanan B'tarove Shalach. Now here's the punchline: Mishum sheha heter v'ha iser bluim legamre biyachad v'ein gargir shel heter she'ein bo chalkik shel iser. I'm not exactly sure what's going on over here. I mean, the thrust of this logic should lead me to the conclusion that we should apply Hanan. Again, the whole purpose or yesod that underlies Hanan is that the heter has no metzius unto itself. It lost its identity and became Isur because of the tam that penetrated into the heter. Why shouldn't that apply in the case of a tarovus of lach? He's saying, ha'isur v'heter bluim legamri biyachad. Isn't that the same as saying that the tam of the Iser penetrates into the heter, and the heter loses its metzius? He dramatizes. He says, "Ein gargir shel heter." There's not one atom in the heter. She'ein bo chelkik shel Iser, that doesn't have Iser because of this concept of bluim legamre biyachad in the case of lach b'lach. So my conclusion would be that the heter has no metzius unto itself, which would mean, therefore, I should apply the principle of Hanan. I don't understand why the Arzarua, based on his logic, and for that matter, Rabbeinu Tam, as we discussed earlier, should belong to the school of the Raifet, that there's no Chanan in Lach Balach. I don't chap it. You know, there's a punchline here that I'm missing. Now, I just want to throw out one possibility. And again, you know, with all due respect, you're the jury, and I don't know that you'll like what I say. But I think that maybe the Raven and the Ozarua are saying the following, that in order to say Hanan, I need two elements in the equation, two conditions. One condition is that the heter, because the Isra is balua inside the heter loses its identity. But I need something else. I need to say, in order to say Hanan, that the Isra has to have its identity. In other words, they're two sides of a coin. The heter loses its identity, and that's because the Isra, in a sense, is gover, it dominates and subjugates the heter, but that's only because the Isra stands b'fnei atzma. So we're going to go now from one extreme to the other. We're going to exclude Hanan in the following two polar extremes. In one polar extreme, we're going to exclude Hanan because the heter remains a separate entity. And that would be the cases of Yovesh B'Yovesh, or the case of a Mashu, where the Mashu doesn't change and undermine the identity of the heter. No Hanan. Then, as we move towards Hanan, we have the case where there's a Tam of Iser that enters into the heter, and therefore the identity of the heter is undermined, completely lost. It loses its Mitzias B'fnei Atzma, and then it turns into Iser. But again, that's only because of the force of the Iser. Now I'm going to go to the other polar extreme, where the entity of heter is completely lost, but at the same time, the identity of the Iser is completely lost. So in order to say Hanan, I need that middle case where on the one end there's the Iser that's dominating, I don't know what word to use, the heter by injecting the heter with its tam and causing the heter to lose its reality. But I still have the Iser. I can point to the Iser and I can say, look, that Iser is now activating. It's now in an active state in which it's projecting its tam into the heter. And then the heter loses its identity, and that's called Hanan. The entire heter turns into Iser. But in the third case, which is the exact opposite, where for sure the heter loses its identity, I'm not going to apply Hanan for the opposite reason, because I don't see in front of me a recognizable Isur that I can identify that's playing the role of Hanan. In other words, Chatichanas Nevela, in which the heter becomes Nevela, is a result of the Nevela. The Nevela has to be actively generating its Isur, or grafting and imposing its Isur on the heter. In this case of Lach Balach, I cannot say that there is an Isur that's standing on its own, identifiable, and is projecting and dominating its Isur status onto the heter. Why? Because haheter va'iser bluim legamrei biyachad. And basically, there's nothing left to the heter, but at the same time, there's nothing left to the iser. Maybe in that case, we don't apply the principle of Hanan. But be that as it may, I'm just submitting to you the facts on the ground, that the Raivid and the Arzarua are of the opinion that in the Taromis of Lach Balach, let's say, for example, Yayin Nesech with Yayin Heter, there would be no Hanan. So for example, if the Yayin Nesach that fell into this Tarovas was X, let's call it one Kezais, and there were 30 Kezaisim in the Heter of the Yayin, now you take something out of this mixture and you put it into another mixture, then all you would need would be Bittul against the original Kezais according to the Rav, because we're not applying the principle of Hanan. And that was Simon Lamed Beis. So I gave you sort of like a little taste, an overview of Simon Lamed Beis. Simon Lamed Gimel, he He takes this a step further and he says that the issue of lach balach might change with regard to basa b'cholov. That's the subject of Siman Lamed Gimel. So that even if you hold like the Ravid, then in the Tarovus of lach balach there is no Chanan, but the Ravid might agree that in basa b'cholov we do apply Chanan, even in the Tarovus of lach balach. What that is all about, I have no clue. But then again, I haven't really done a thorough research. It goes on for pages and pages. I just want to pull out one line here in the middle of this whole Siman Lamed Gimel. He writes, "Lo nemar din chanan belach kevan shu nivlal." Once again, that same concept of nivlal, where everything is mixed together as one entity, and there's no heker, you know, there's nothing nikar bifnei atzma. So again, we need that, you know, that chaticha of isa, where we point to the chaticha and we see that it's giving tam into the heter. So you have that meaningful tam of isa that's powerful in a negative sense and it destroys the heter. But in a case of bolul, then what are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about the tam of the isa that's going into the heter. Everything is bolul together. You know, there's no ikar and tofel. There's no isa and heter. It's all one big happy blila. And therefore, you don't apply the principle of chanan. Okay, Rabbi. So let's go back to the Gemara on Daf Kuftes on the days. And we're talking about the case of Chal. And we said the following, just to summarize. Chaim, you weren't here yesterday.
Right. Where are you exactly?
I'll tell you exactly where I am after I give you just a little of review of what we did yesterday.
Okay.
So that you'll be up to date. We know that Chal is basar, but it is totally saturated. It's like a sack that's holding on to a serious volume of chalav. However, on a Doraisa level, since you find the chal and you remove it from the body of the animal after shechita, so that's called chalav shechuta. The Torah allows chalav shechuta. The Rabbanan prohibit chalav shechuta in the case where the chalav was niflat, as soon as it leaves the chal, then the Rabbanon see it as chalav, right? Because again, you see it as chalav shchuto, as long as it's saturated inside or enclosed inside the chal. So you look at that chalav and you say, well, the chalav is inside the chal was removed after shchita, and it's not chalav. But once the chalav comes out, then that chalav becomes what's called chalav midrabanan. And if it's mixed with basar, you have basar b'chalav derabanan. And yesterday we discussed the difference between bishul and tzli. So what happens if he takes the chal, which is, as we said, saturated with milk, and he cooks it in a pot? What happens is the chalav is now niflat. It leaves the chal as a result of the bishul. And now we have two different issues that arise. Number one, if there's other basar in that kedera, that basar now is going to be bolea chalav. And although that chalav is muta min haTorah, it's asa min rabbanon once it was niflat from the chal. I have another problem. Even if there's no other basar in this kedera, and there's only the chal, we have a process of both pleita and blia, back and forth. It's like, you know, you throw a ball against the wall and it boomerangs. So what happens here also is the following. That once you cook the chal, the chalav is niflat, and then it gets reabsorbed, it's nivlashuv, into the chal. And once it became asur mirabbanan as chalav, and that happened as soon as it was niflat, Now this chalav is nivla through the hemshech habishul back into the kchal. So I now have basam chalav dirabbanon. Again, if in the mayim there's shishim against the chalav, then the chalav is batel as soon as it's nivla. But let's assume that the ratio between the chalav inside the kchal and the water in which you're cooking the kchal is, let's say, 1 to 59. So that you don't have 60 in the mayim, now that cholav is cholav, it goes back into the kchal. So our whole discussion now about what happens if he didn't do kriya, meaning he didn't remove the cholav from the kchal and he went ahead and he cooked it, that's going to be, and the Gemara vacillates back and forth whether it's mutter, that's only in a case of what? Tzli. Because in the case of tzli, when he roasts the kchal, then the cholav is niflat, but it goes in a downward motion, and it's never nivla back into the kchal. Again, what would happen if you had some meat on the bottom, and as you were roasting the kchal, you know, the cholav from the kchal would fall into the meat, you know, that's a different issue. That for sure is going to be bas mechal d'rabbanan. But we're not talking about that mitzvah. We're talking about a case where he is roasting the kchal, the cholav is coming out of the kchal, now becomes cholav d'rabbanan, but it never goes back into the kchal, because what happens in tzli is that the cholav goes down and drips in a downward motion. But if he's cooking it, then what we have is that the cholav is niflat from the kchal, and then it's nivla chazora into the kchal, and that generates basam b'chol d'rabbanan. So that's what we did yesterday. We came to the conclusion that everybody agrees in the case of Bishul, if he didn't do the kriya, which means he didn't cut the, you know, the kchal before he cooked it, so the kchal is now saturated with cholav, that cholav after the bliya, after the plato, becomes cholav d'rabbanan, and then it goes back in, that's a problem. No one could solve that problem. With regard to tzli, the Gemara vacillates back and forth. One sheet, These are two Lashonos and Rav that we went through yesterday. One Lashon and Rav says that in the case of Tzli, although you should have done Kriya, if you didn't do the Kriya, then B'dieved, we can eat the Kchal, there's no problem, because the Tzli sets up a plate on which the Cholav doesn't go back into the Kchal. But the second Lashon and Rav says that we should aser it even in the case of Tzli. Now, why the second shita of Rav would aser it even in the case of tzli is not clear, and perhaps at the end of today we'll be able to figure that out. But now, Chaim, you asked me where we're up to, so now I can give you the answer to that question. We're going to look for a Gemara that starts Ketzad Kora'o.
And then afterwards it's Amar Rav Yehuda?
Correct. So it's approximately, I would say, 12 to 15 lines up from the bottom of Kuf Tes Amid Beis. Ketzad Koro, the Mishnah says that if you have kchal, you're required to slice it in order to remove its milk. How do you slice it? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Shite is l'chumra, he's really going very far out, he wants the guarantee that you remove all the milk from the kchal. Shesi v'arev, which means both the direction of up and down, and from side to side. I guess you'd call it an X.
Does he mean my cut it all the way through so you end up with four pieces?
I'm not sure if you have to end up with four pieces, because again, for the cholav to come out, all you need is a slice that is significant enough for the cholav to come oozing out. But he requires that it be in both directions. Okay. Not only that, he says, V'tocho b'kosel. What happened? V'tocho b'kosel. He says you should take the kchal in your hand and smash it against the hard surface. Let's call it a kosel. And that's going to cause schita. That's going to cause squeezing out the milk from the cholav. And once you go through this entire process of cutting it, slicing it in two directions, plus pushing it up against a solid substance, you're going to achieve your goal, and you're going to remove all the cholav from the kchal. You know, you begin to understand that in Rabbi Yehuda's frame of reference, that we have to, you know, make sure that we don't leave any milk behind, leave no captives behind. We're very concerned about this chalav derabanan, because again, the whole, you know, the worst case scenario here is you have chalav derabanan. It's chalav shkuta, which is mutar min haTorah. But once the rabbanan created this iser of chalav, then they go with it and carry the ball all the way. You got to make sure that there's no chalav over here. But the Gemara tells us a story which might indicate that we don't accept the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. The story is about Rabbi Elazar. Omer le Rabbi Elazar l'shamei. Rabbi Elazar told his mishares, Krali va'ana echal. Cut for me the kchal. Notice he doesn't mention, he doesn't instruct his hoizbach, as we call it, of shesi v'arev. He just says, cut it. You know, make a slice in it, and I'll eat it. Maika mashmalon. Is Rabbi Eliezer simply repeating masnisini, what we learned in the Mishnah? The Mishnah says a kal koro, and then you can eat it. So what was Rabbi Elazar making this big to do? And he told the Shammai that you should cut it. Haka mashmalon, says the Gemara, the chiddush of Rabbi Elazar is lafukim from Rabbi Yehuda. The lo be'inon shesi v'arev utcha b'kosel. No, it's basically, according to Rabbi Elazar, all you need is one slice into the kal, and then go ahead and roast it. Again, we're talking about sli, because certainly, according to Rabbi Elazar, we have to consider that there's still milk left inside of the kal. So you may have gotten rid of most of the milk, and that's what the Rabbanan require, and that's sufficient for sli. But it's not sufficient to allow Bishul.
You're presenting this as we don't pasuk like Rabbi Yehuda, but how do I know that Rabbi Elazar wins?
I don't know. I'm just going to go through the sugya with you, and we'll try to see if the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, or it's like Rabbi Elazar.
Okay, so I misunderstood you. Okay, sorry.
Now, in the footnote here, he says that, and he bases it on Rashi, that Divrei Rabbi Elazar Nemru Litzlia Vishmianu, and Rabbi Elazar is telling me a chiddush that Ein Tzach L'Kro Shesi V'Arev El B'Bishul. If his intention is to cook it, then he has to guarantee, and Rabbi Elazar doesn't deny that, that he gets rid of all the milk. And it's not enough just to do one simple slice. Why? Because the Cholav is Niflat B'Shasa Bishul V'Chosev Nivla B'Bosa Kchal. Correct? That we went through. It goes out and it comes back in. Avol b'tzliya enom chozev enivla v'day b'kriyas shesi o orev. One of the two. Either this direction or that direction. And that is the shita of Rashi. Now there seems to be a girsa change which would support this shita of Rashi. And it says kakamash malon. Take a look at the Gemara. But you'll see the change. De lo ba'init shesi v'arev ela likdera. Those are two words that we don't have in the text of Agamar. If you have those two words, then ela likdera means bishul. So in the case of the full-fledged kriya, which means shesi v'arev and tacha b'kosel, that's because he's preparing the chal for bishul. He's got to get rid of all the milk. Our Gemara, Rabbi Loza's statement, is addressing a case of tzli, that he has no intention of cooking it, but rather of roasting it, and therefore, a barest minimum, we'll call it a mashu of kriya, is sufficient. He doesn't have to guarantee that all the milk was removed, because at the end of the day, he's going to roast it. So John and I learned this Gemara yesterday. We'll just go over it again. It's a fascinating Gemara. Yalta is the wife of Rav Nachman, a very smart woman. And she says the following, Michti, we have a principle. Kol de'osa lon rachmana, whatever the Torah says is asur, so you're not allowed to taste something that's asur and enjoy its benefits. Sharolon kavaseh, the Torah allows us to eat something that's very similar and has the same ta'am. For example, In the case of dam, asal on a dama, but you're allowed to eat something that has the taste of dam. What has the taste of dam? Sharlon kavda. Again, we're going to have a whole sugya later on about kaved, which is a liver. And the liver is full of dam. And yet, you're allowed to eat the liver. Now, the reason for that is a principle which, again, we're going to get to later, which is called dam karush. And dam karush, although it has a tam of dam, but it's not technically considered dam. Then he goes on to the case of nida. So you can have a woman who has dam nida, and she's asura, but she could have something called dam tohar, which would either be the case of yoledes, which is today's daf yomi, or it could be the case of dam besulin. So these are cases where a woman sees dam, and yet she's allowed to have relations. Then we have chelev. We have chelev behema and chelev chaya. You're not allowed to eat chelev behema, but you're allowed to eat the chelev of a chaya. And they presumably have this similar taste. Chazir, you're not allowed to eat chazir, but you have something in a fish which has a taste like chazir, and that's mocha de shibuta. The moach of a fish called shibuta, and I think we determined that even the great scholars of that generation don't know what shibuta is. And then we have something called gerusa, and that is a oaf tame, a certain kind of bird that you're not allowed to eat, but the Torah allows to eat lishna de kavara, which again is some sort of a fish that has a tongue, and the tongue of the fish has the taste similar to this bird called gerusa. You're not allowed to have relations with an ashes ish, but grusha, even b'chai baila, who's, you know, her husband is still around, and it, psychologically there's still like a relationship between the ex and her ex-wife, and his ex-wife, nevertheless you're allowed to marry her. Or, for example, Eishasach, you're not allowed to marry your sister-in-law, the sister of your brother, in the exceptional case of Yavama. Kusus, you can't marry a non-Jewish, but the exceptional case is Yafas Tohar. And then she turns to her husband and she says, Be'ina lemechal bisra b'chalva. I have a desire to eat basa b'chalav. You know, so she wants to go into McDonald's and have a cheeseburger. So what can I do? Can you give me some sort of expression, some sort of venting of that desire? And he says, Amalu Rav Nachman letabache. He turns to his butchers and he says to them, Zvikule kachali, which means roast for her a kachal. And as we said before, when you roast the kachal, you don't have to get rid of all the chalav. By the way, this would indicate Chaim that we do accept Rabbi Lazar, because we're not doing a complete total kriya, squeezing out every last drop of milk. So there's still some milk that's left in the kachal, and we're going to allow you to roast the kachal, and you'll taste a little bit of a tam of basa b'chalav when you eat this roasted kachal.
That also supports, though, that Rabbi Elazar was just talking about tzliyah.
Correct. That's for sure. We have no question about it. Rabbi Elazar would require a full-fledged total kriya with the whole shesivyar of the whole 9 yards in the case of bishul. The chiddush of Rabbi Elazar was that in the case of tzli, he doesn't have to do a full-fledged kriya, etc. Okay. Now the Gemara asks the following question. How can Rav Nachman allow taking this kachal without a complete kriya and roasting it and eating it? For anantanan, our Mishnah says, Hakal koro umotzi es chelbo. And it implies that you have to do a serious kriya. So the Gemara answers, Hahu, the Mishnah, is likdera. The Mishnah is talking about a case where his intention is not to roast the kachal, but rather to cook the kachal. And in order to allow cooking the kachal and guarantee that there won't be cholav haniflat, that's shuv nivla, we need to do a complete kriya and guarantee that we remove all the chalav. That's not the discussion of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was talking about sleep. The Gemara is still not happy. Vaktani, the Mishnah. No, I'm sorry, this is no longer a Mishnah, this is a Braisa. The Braisa says, with regard to Kachal, Shed Bishlo, if he cooks it in its milk, mutter. Now again, although it says the word bishlo here, Rashi and other Rishonim point out that certainly this brisa is referring to a case of tzli, not to bishul, meaning the word bishul in the language of the Tanoim is a generic term, or I should say an all-inclusive term, and it includes all different forms of cooking, including roasting. But here in this case, the word bishul is referring specifically to roasting, because again, we cannot be matir bishul in the case of chalav chal, because it goes out and it goes back in, which makes it into basavu chalav derabbanan. But in any event, the brisa says that chal shebishlo, which means you went ahead and you roasted the chal without removing its chalav, then it's mutter, because you did such a thing, b'di'evet, post facto. L'chatchila lo. If he would have asked us, Rabbi, am I allowed to do this? I would have said no. We would really require a full kriya before the tzli. And that doesn't reflect the shita that we saw here of Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Nachman. So the Gemara answers, who adin dafil l'chatchila? That in truth, if you're only interested in roasting the chal, you don't have to get rid of its milk. Even l'chatchila, you don't require this kriya that will guarantee that you removed its milk. But we're going to apply the Ivy rule, right? The symmetry rule. Ivy the kaboy levisne seifa. Because the end of this brisa is going to talk about something that is asur, and that's the case of keva. Okay, we're now going to turn to Dafkuf Yud, Shebishla Bechalava Asura. So what's this case of a keva? Right, you slaughter the calf that was born to the cow, the mother cow, and you find in its belly milk. And then you go ahead and you cook the calf, or at least that part of the calf, with its milk. Asura. The afilu di'evin namilo. And the reason for that is because once the chalav left the body, the udders of its mother, when the calf suckled from its mother, at that point it becomes chalav d'oraisa. It's not a chalav shchuta, it's a chalav of a ru'ulius aim, of a chayav, a living animal. So now if you're going to take that chalav and cook it together with the basar of the calf, you have now basar chalav d'oraisa. It's tananami reisha shebishla. The reisha uses a case, or I should say a language, of b'di'evit. In order to contrast the b'di'evit situation of chal with that of chalav in the keva. So in the chalav in the keva, b'di'evit it's asur because it's possible chalav d'oraisa. In the case of chal, b'di'evit it's mutter because it's not possible chalav. And now we're talking about tzli. And the brisa should have gone and could have gone one step further and told you that in the case of tzli, I don't even have to guarantee that there's no chalav in the tzli. And there's even a l'chatchila heter of that sort. But the reason why the brisa utilizes the lashon of a b'di'evit is not because l'chatchila it's asur, but to tell you that even that it's different and in contrast to the sefer of keva, where it's going to be asur midoraisa as basar b'chalav. Here we have no problem because it's chalav shchuta. And now the Gemara tells us a story about a case of chal that was cooked with its milk, and it's asur b'di'evet. As we said before, in the case of Bishul, it goes out and it goes back in. Ki solik Rabbi Lazar, when Rabbi Lazar went on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, because the word solik means to go up, and the Gemara says that Eretz Yisrael is higher than the other lands, is Ashkechei l'Zeiri. He has an encounter with Zeiri. Amale. So Rabbi Lozer turns to Zeiri and he asks him the following question. Ika tana di asne l'rav kchal. Is there any tana Over here, again, the word Tana here means an Amora. Usually Tana is a Tana, but here we're talking about Rav Ziri. We're talking about Ziri who lived at the time of the Amoraim. Is there someone here who learns Brisos, Mishnayos, and he taught these Brisos that deal with Chal, and he came to the conclusion that Chal, if you cook it without getting rid of its milk, is asur b'dieved. Achve, he points, l'Rav Yitzchak bar Avudimi. The Rav Yitzchak, who is one of the locals here in Eretz Yisrael, he has a quote, he has a source, an origin, for the din of Chal. And Amalei, when Rav Elazar tracks down Rav Yitzchak to ask him exactly what he had in his text, in his transmission of the Torah about Chal, to his surprise, Rav Yitzchak's response was, Ani lo shanisi lo, Chal kol ikar. That in truth, I was not able to present to Rav any source about Chal, but Rav himself, and this is the Rav in the Lishna Basra that we mentioned at the beginning of our discussion today, who says that Chal, after Bishul B'chalv, is Asur B'dieved, his reason is because Bika Matzah V'Gader V'Gader. This is mind-boggling. He found out that people were actually eating Basur B'chalv. Now, exactly how that happened, I don't know. We said before that Basur B'chalv is a chidush, because this is mutter, that's mutter, but the ignorance was such that they ate Basur B'chalv. Now, in order to set this situation straight, sometimes you have to go to the other extreme. So Rav took an extra measure of chumrah in order that people should realize that there is an Isur Basur B'chalv that they have to be careful about. So he said about something that even though it's technically not Basur B'chalv, because the chalav is chalav shchuta, nevertheless he asked it. The Rav Ikla Litau Lofush, Tat Lofush. All right, so there's a place called by that name. Next time you're there, let me know. And when he got there, Shameh, he overheard a conversation between a wife and her neighbor. So Shameh Lahi Issa, he hears this woman, the Karmel Chaverta, she's telling a friend, Riva de Bisra, Kamach, and she wants to know about recipes. Right, in recipes you need to know percentage. So she said, a revia de bisra, one quarter of a piece of meat, kama chalava boila vishuli, how much milk do I need in order to cook this meat? And obviously she was cooking meat and milk and serving it for dinner. So Amar, so Rav, when he heard this, he declared, lo gemiri, they don't learn, the people don't know, the bas b'chal of asur, and therefore Yaakov, he spent a little time there, and ka'asalu kachale, and he paskin for them in that particular location, that even chal, which technically is mutter, if you cook it in its milk, it's asur. And this was a geder, a fence or a siag, in order to guarantee that the people would learn about the isur of basur b'chalav. Rav Kahana Masnei Hocha, Rav Kahana also heard this story about Rav Elazar and Rav Yitzchak bar Avdumi, and he had the same version that we had. But Rav Yossi bar Abba, he was of a different opinion. Masni, the way he heard this story, his nusach of the story, was the following. That Rav Yitzchak responded to Rav Elazar, Ana chal shel minika shanisi lo, I taught Rav a brisa with regard to a behema menika. In other words, we're talking now about the calf. And that's why Rav says it was also b'dieved. Because in the case of the calf, as we said before, the chalav was already poresh, michayim, right, during the lifetime of its mother. The mother is alive and well at the time of the chalav. And therefore, it's chalav d'oraisa. Umipilpulo shel Rabbi Chia shanalei chal stam. Now, what Rav did was he heard something from his uncle Rabbi Chia, And Reb Chiya was very sharp, and he spoke about the fact that Chal is Asur. And Rabbi Chiya thought that the Talmidim would be very sharp. They would also understand. And guess what? What he left out was one little but very important detail, that we're talking about Chal Shalmeinika. So he left out the word Shalmeinika, and he was misunderstood. So Rav repeated what he heard from Rav Chiya, that Chal is Asur, without that qualification that we're talking about Chal of Menika. And the Talmidim didn't understand Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya relied on that, but he was disappointed, because the Talmidim thought that since he mentioned Chal, and he didn't specify that he was talking about Chal Shel Menika, they transmitted this Iser as an Iser Stam. And Rav understood that that was an Iser Stam, that in any case of Chal of a Behema, even though it's not a Menika, that milk is not milk, and yet it's Asur. So just like in the case of Chal Shel Menika, the transmission of Rav Chiya indicated that it was Asur B'dieved, if he cooks it, they took it one step further, and Rav, as the leader of the pack, understood that that would apply even to Chal Shel Behema, meaning after Shechita, you took out the Chal. So what do we do now with Chal, Halacha L'maisa? So the Gemara concludes this by saying the following, Ravin Rav Yitzchak Rav Yosef Iklu L'Bei Rav Papi. They came to the house of Rav Papi, Aisu L'Kamei Tavshila D'Chal, and they brought in front of them cooked Chal. Rav Yitzchak Rav Yosef Ochal. Rav Yitzchak took the leniency and he ate it. Ravin Lo Ochal. Ravin refused to eat it. Omar Abaye, Ravin Tchola. Okay, this has to do with the history of Ravin. Ravin actually had a very tragic life. He lost children during his lifetime. So he's called Tchola. Tchola means Shakul. You know, he's a bereaved person. Amailo Ochal. Michti de Besu de Rapapi, Barate de Rab Yitzchak Nafchahave. The wife, who is here, the host of Rav Papi, is the daughter of Yitzchak Nafcha. She's a great, you know, Bas Talmud Chacham, the daughter of a great scholar. For Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, Mori de Uvdahavi, Rav Yitzchak Nafcha was somebody who was known to be very, very meticulous, very careful. All his maisim were always done with the most strict adherence to the halacha. Ilav de Shamile mi Beinosha, if not for the fact that she heard from her father that Chal is mutalo havi avda, she wouldn't have prepared it for the great Chachamim. So therefore, Abai is telling Ravin, there's no reason for you to be inhibited about eating the Chal. And again, we're going to have to assume one of two things. Either we're talking about Bishul, meaning Tzli, or we're talking about a case where they did the Shesi V'arev and the entire Tachlo B'Kosel. They got rid of all the Chalav, and then they cooked it. So even though Ravin was nervous about this, he always thought maybe there's still some Chalav that was left inside. We see from the base of the Rav Papi, who's the daughter of Yitzchak Nafcha, that she must have heard from her father that this is okay. And once you remove the chalav, you could be mavashalit, or in the case of tzli, even if you do the minimum amount of kriya, that is sufficient. Besura lo achli kachali, bepupadisa achli kachali. There were different traditions and customs with regard to chal. In other words, in pupadisa, they were lenient, and once they did the kriya, they would rely on the kriya, whether it's a minimal kriya for tzli or it's a maximum kriya for bishul, and they relied on the efficacy of the kriya. But not so in surah. The Gemara tells us the following story, and with this we'll conclude for today. Rami Bar Tamri, that was his name, he was an Amora. Dehu Rami Bar Dikuli, he also had another nickname. And he was made Pupadisa. He came from Pupadisa where they were Mekil and they ate Chal. L'surah, and he shows up in surah. B'mali Yom HaKippur, it's Erev Yom Kippur. Everyone's eating the suda of basar. And Afkinu, they brought down Kuliyalma L'Khilnu. They brought a bunch of chal for Kuliyalma, for the entire entourage of people, the whole gathering and all the guests. So they shechted a behema, and they took the chal, they did the kriya, then they cooked it, and now they're serving it for the sudas Erev Yom HaKippurim. Shadinu. So the people here in Surah, they don't eat chal, so they threw it out. But apparently they threw it out in a way that you could go into the rubbish bin and fish it out. Azal ihu. So this Pupadisa fellow, what's his name again, Rami, he goes into the rubbish bin, naktinu, and he takes it out, viachlinu, and he eats it. Aisu l'kami de Rav Chizkiya, they bring him in front of Rav Chizkiya. Rav Chizkiya is the Gadol Ador, and Rav Chizkiya is going to know what to do with a person who eats chal in the city of Surah. He's going to punish him. So Amar Le Rav Chizkiya turns to Rami Bar Tam and he says, Amai Ta'avid Hachi, why do you do such a thing? You know, you have a decent reputation. Amar Le, so Rami Bar Chami says to Rav Chizkiya, May Asrid Rabbi Yehuda, no, I come from Pupadisa, and the head honcho in Pupadisa is Rabbi Yehuda, the Achil, and he allows us to eat Chal. Amar Le, so Rav Chizkiya is upset. He says, Lesle, don't you know a Mishnah in Masechet Pesachim? The Mishnah says, if you go from one place to the other, Nosim Olav Chumrei Amokum Sheyatzim Misham, the Chumrei Amokum Sheolach Lesham. You're forced to take on the local minog as long as you're here, if that minog is Lechumra. You can't be Mekil based on the fact that it was a Kul of Yatza of Mokum Sheyatzim Misham. So you came from Pupadisa, but now you're in our territory, you're in Surah. And don't you know that Mishnah? It's the first mission of the fourth parak of Psachim. Omale, Rami Bar Tami responds to Rav Chizkiya, Chutz l'tchum achletinu. I ate it outside the city. I didn't eat it within the boundaries of Surah. I was outside of Surah. There I was allowed to eat it. Now this story goes on and on and on. We've just begun the story, and tomorrow, B'li Neder, we'll try to complete the story. And I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a wonderful day.
You brought up the case of the pregnant
cow.
It wasn't after me not with the cow of the pregnant.
If the cow has a calf, it gave birth to a calf, and now the calf is suckling its mother's milk.
So we assume it's going to more
so that milk is chalav d'oraisa. Why? Because it's not chalav shchuta, because the mother is alive and well. Now it's in the keva of the calf, and it's chalav d'oraisa. If you cook the calf, or that part of the with the chalav, then what you end up with is basar b'chalav d'oraisa.